And he gathered up all the food of the 7 years which were in the land of Egypt, and laid up the food in the cities. The food of the field which was round about every city laid he up in the same. In other words, the grain tribute of all the land round, year in, year out, streamed into the fabulous, skittle-shaped granaries which Adon had built in all the cities and their environs. Not too many of them, as it turned out, for they got filled, and more had to be built to meet the incoming tribute. So well did Hoppy the Nourisher mean by his land. The heaping up was in truth like the sands of the sea. Song and saga are quite correct. But when they add that they left numbering, for it was without number, that is an exaggeration due to enthusiasm. The children of Egypt never stopped counting, writing down, and bookkeeping. It was not in their nature, and did not happen. Though the fullness of the provision was indeed as the sands of the sea, yet these worshippers of the white ape held it to be their first and finest preoccupation to cover paper with the close-written calculations and detailed accountings which Joseph exacted from his collectors and inspectors throughout the period. They counted 5 years of abundance. Some people, even many people, counted 7. It is idle to dispute the point. Observers who stuck to the 5 may have been thinking of the 5 extra days in the year, and the tax quota based on that figure. On the other hand, 5 years of fatness, one after another, are so joyful in themselves that it would be easy to celebrate by calling them 7. Yes, it is possible to make 5 out of 7, yet, after all, a bit more human to make 7 out of 5. The narrator frankly confesses his uncertainty, for it is not his way to pretend to knowledge where he has not got it. The same thing applies to the admission that we do not know exactly how old Joseph was at a certain point during the period of scarcity. He may have been either 37 or 39. It is certain that he was 30 when he stood before Pharaoh. Objectively certain from our own point of view, for it is doubtful if he himself knew. But what he was at that later crucial moment, whether only in his latish 30s, or already as good as 40, we do not know, and must be reconciled to the uncertainty. He, of course, a child of his time and place, gave the matter little thought, or none at all. Anyhow, he was now in the prime of life. If, as a boy, he had been stolen away into Babylonia instead of Egypt, he would long ago have assumed a full black beard, curled and pomaded, an appendage which would have helped him not a little in a certain game he was to play. But we can be grateful to the Egyptian custom that kept the Rachel face free of beard. Even so, he succeeded in the game, and that shows how much the chiseling hand of time, the change of matter, the sun of his adopted land, had worked upon his original characteristics to change them. Joseph's figure, up till the time when he was drawn up out of his second pit to stand before Pharaoh, had remained quite youthful. After his marriage, during the fat years, when God made him fruitful in Asenath the maid, and she bore him first Manasseh, and then Ephraim, in the women's quarters of his house, he grew a little heavier, perhaps a little too heavy, though not fat. He was tall enough to carry it off. His commanding presence, gentled by the shrewd and humorous glance of his black eyes and the charm of the smiling Rachel mouth, accounted for the popular verdict that Joseph was an exceptionally handsome man. A thought too full-bodied, possibly, but definitely handsome. His physical increase chimed with the period of general luxuriance. In fact, the amazing increase of production showed itself in every direction. The herds, for instance, so multiplied that it reminded the educated of the words of the old song, "Thy goats shall bear twofold, thy sheep drop twins." And the women of Egypt, too, in both city and country, bore, probably in consequence of better food, much oftener than usual. But nature, partly through the negligence of the overburdened mothers, partly through the incidence of new infant diseases, redressed the balance by an increase in infant mortality, so there was no danger of overpopulation. It was only the birth rate that so strikingly increased. Pharaoh, too, became a father. The mistress of the lands had already been expectant on the day of the interpretation, but there was a tendency to believe that its fulfillment was responsible for her happy delivery. It was the sweet Princess Merit Auton who now came into the world. The physicians, on aesthetic grounds, lengthened the still plastic skull almost excessively, and rejoicings were loud in the palace and throughout the land, the louder to conceal a disappointment at the failure of an heir to the throne. But not even later did one appear. Pharaoh, his lifelong, begot only daughters. 6 in all. Nobody knows the law determining sex, whether it is already present in the sperm, or whether the balance, after some wavering, goes down on one side or the other. We can contribute no information on the subject, and neither could the wise men from Babel and on, not even among themselves. On the other hand, we can scarcely be argued out of the conviction that it was something about young Amenhotep himself which resulted in his exclusively female issue. Be that as it may, the fact must have been a small and unacknowledged cloudlet upon the king's wedded happiness, though of course the most tender mutual consideration prevailed at all times. Either of them might have said to the other what Jacob said to impatient Rachel, "Am I in God's stead, who hath withheld from thee thy heart's desire?" On one of the sweet princesses, the fourth, there was conferred, out of sheer tenderness, the title of the Queen of the Lands, Nefer Nefruaton, for her own name. But the fifth was given one almost identical, Nefer Nefrure, which would seem to be due to a flagging of interest. The names of the others, still showing some affectionate ingenuity, I could easily tell you too, but sharing the slight irritation which all this female preponderance is bound to set up, I feel no inclination to put them down. Considering that T, the great mother, still stood at the head of the House of the Sun, that Queen Nefertiti had a sister, Nezemut, that there was a still living sister of the king, the sweet Princess Baket Aton, and that to these, in the course of the years, were added the king's 6 daughters, we must envisage a regular women's court, where Mani was the only cock among a whole flock of hens, and this was not at all consonant with his phoenix dream of an immaterial father spirit of light. One is reminded of Joseph's remark during the famous conversation with Pharaoh, one of the best things he said, that the power which strove from below upwards into the purity of light must be truly power and of a masculine kind, not mere tenderness. A slight shadow, then, lay upon the royal happiness of Amenhotpe and his golden pigeon, the sweet lady of the land, because no son was vouchsafed them. Joseph's marriage with Asenath the maid was also happy, happy and harmonious throughout, with a similar limitation. Only sons were born to them, 1, 2, and later others on whom the light of history does not fall. In fact, the abducted bride bore only sons, and was grievously disappointed, and probably her spouse as well, who would gladly have begot a daughter for her, at least one daughter. After all, the fact remains that a man can beget, but not create. Asenath was simply possessed with the idea of a daughter, not just one daughter, but several. In fact, she would have preferred nothing but daughters. She, who had been a virgin of the shield, desired nothing more ardently than to raise up the same out of the depth of her own virginity. And she was abetted by her nagging mother, who persisted in the affronted pose she had assumed from the beginning, and thus fomented a slight but permanent marital discord, always kept within bounds, of course, by affection and consideration. This was probably at its height in the beginning, when Joseph's eldest son was born. Asenath's disappointment was acute. One might justly call it exaggerated. And it looks as though something of his annoyance at the reproaches he had to bear slipped into the name Joseph gave the child. "I have forgotten," he may have been trying to say, "all that lies behind me, and my father's house as well. But you and your offended mother, you act not only utterly disappointed, but as though I were to blame to boot." Something of this kind may lie at the bottom of the strange choice of the name Manasseh. But it is well to add that we need not take the name or its meaning too seriously. If God had made Joseph forget all his past connections and his father's house, how then did the same Joseph come to give Hebrew names to his Egyptian sons? Was it because he could count on the foreign names being found elegant in the monkey land of Egypt? No. It was because Jacob's son, however long he had been arrayed in the fleshly garment of an Egyptian, had not forgotten at all, but had always in his mind what he said he had forgotten. The name Manasseh was nothing but a polite flourish, a case not of foolishness, but the reverse, and an instance of the tact of which Joseph all his life long had been past master. It was a plain statement of the fact that God had snatched him away and transplanted him into the worldly sphere out of two motives, one of them jealousy, the other the comprehensive plan of deliverance. As to the second, Joseph could only speculate. The first lay entirely open to his shrewd eyes, that saw far enough even to see through God's design and recognize that it was really the first, and that the second only offered the means of uniting suffering and wisdom. The words, to see through, may seem irreverent in such a connection, but is there an activity more religious than studying the soul life of God? To meet the politic of the highest with an earthly one is indispensable if one wants to get on in life. If Joseph had been silent, like the grave, and as the grave, to his father all these years, it was deliberate policy and understanding insight into the soul life of the highest that had enabled him to be so, and his name for his firstborn was in the same category. If I am supposed to forget, the name was meant to say, then, lo, I have forgotten. But he had not.